the approaches to the entrance. There were about 10 beasts sitting in a semicircle around it. Now the advantage was his, and he wasted no time in using it. Switching on the laser gun sight, he put the red dot on the head of the largest of the beasts and, taking a breath, pulled the trigger. A short burst sounded, and the creature soundlessly fell onto its side. The others dashed off in different directions at lightning speed, and a moment later the street was empty. But there was no doubt they didn't intend to go far. Artyom decided to wait it out, and be certain that the death of their colleague really had frightened off the remaining beasts. In the meantime, he had a little time in which to study the apartment. Though the glass here, as in the whole house, had been broken long ago, the furniture and all the fittings had been preserved surprisingly well. Small pads had been spread around the floor, resembling the rat poison they used at Vidyenko. Perhaps that was why Artyom had not noticed one rat in the rooms. The longer he walked around the apartment, the more he was convinced that the residents had not abandoned it in a hurry, but had preserved it, hoping some time to return. No food had been left in the kitchen to attract rodents or insects, and much of the furniture was carefully wrapped in cellophane. Moving from room to room, Artyom tried to imagine what the everyday life of the people who had lived here had been. How many of them lived here? What time did they get up, arrive home from work, have dinner? Who sat at the head of the table? He knew about many of the jobs, rituals, and things only through books, and now seeing a real dwelling was convinced that much of what he had imagined earlier was totally wrong. Artyom carefully lifted the semi-transparent polyethylene film and examined the bookshelves. Several colorful children's books stood among the detective stories he knew from the bookstalls in the metro. He grasped one of them at the spine and gently pulled it out. While he paged through the decorative depictions of happy animals, a sheet of cardboard fell from the book. Bending over, Artyom lifted it off the floor. It turned out to be a fading photograph of a smiling woman with a small child in her arms. He was petrified. His heart went into palpitations. Having just been dispersing the blood through his body in measured beats, it suddenly had sped up, beating inappropriately. Artyom terribly wanted to remove his tight gas mask to get a jolt of fresh air, if it had not been poisonous. Carefully, as if concerned that the picture turned to dust from his touch, he took it from the shelf and lifted it to his eyes. The woman in the picture was about 30 years old and the little one in her arms not more than 2, and it was difficult to determine if it was a boy or girl from the funny cap on its head. The child was looking straight at the camera, and its expression was surprisingly grown up and serious. Artyom turned over the photograph, and the glass of his gas mask became clouded. On the other side was written in a blue ballpoint pen, "Little Artyom is 2 years and 5 months old." It was as if they had pulled a rod out of him. His legs went weak and he slid down to the floor, placing the picture in the moonlight falling from the window. Why did the smile of the woman in the photograph seem so familiar to him, so like his own? Why had he begun to feel suffocated as soon as he saw her? More than 10 million people had been living in it before this city perished. Artyom is not the most widely used name, but there had to have been several tens of thousands of children with such a name in a megapolis of many millions. It was as if they called all the present inhabitants of the metro the same. The chance was so small that it simply made no sense to consider it. But why then did the smile of the woman in the photograph seem so familiar to him? He tried to recall scraps of memories about his childhood that sometimes flashed before his mind's eye. A comfortable small room, soft lighting, a woman reading a book, a wide ottoman. He leapt up, passing through the rooms like a whirlwind, trying to find in one of them furniture similar to that of which he had dreamed. It seemed to him in an instant that the furniture in one of the rooms was arranged the same as in his memories. The couch looked a bit different, and a window was not there, but this picture may have left something of a distorted imprint on the consciousness of a 3-year-old child. 3 years old. The age on the photograph was different, but this too meant nothing. There was no date with the inscription. It could have been taken at any time. It didn't have to be several days before the residents of the apartment had to leave it forever. The photo may have been taken half a year, even a year before this, he convinced himself. Then the age of the boy in the hat in the picture would coincide with his own. Then the probability that he himself was portrayed in the picture, and his mother, would be much greater.
But the photograph could have been taken 3 or 5 years before this,
an alien voice coldly stated inside him. Could have. Suddenly another thought entered his head. Flinging open the door to the bathroom, he glanced around and almost missed what he was looking for. The mirror was covered with such a layer of dust that it didn't even reflect the light from his flashlight. Artyom removed a towel left by the apartment's owners from its hook and wiped off the mirror. The area he cleared revealed his reflection in his gas mask and helmet. He illuminated himself with the flashlight and looked into the mirror. His drawn, emaciated face was not entirely visible beneath the plastic visor of the gas mask, but the look of the deeply sunken dark eyes, barely making its way back from the mirror, suddenly seemed to him similar to the look of the boy in the photograph. Artyom brought the photograph to his face, looked intently at the boy's tiny face, and then looked at the mirror. Again he held the light on the picture, and again he looked at his own face beneath the gas mask, trying to recall how it looked the last time he saw his reflection. When was that? Not long before he had left Vidyenka, but it was impossible to say how much time had passed since then. Judging by the man he saw in the mirror now, several years. If only he could pull off this damned mask and compare himself with the child in the photo. Of course, people now and then become unrecognizable while growing up, but something remains in the face of everyone that reminds one of their distant childhood. There was one possibility. When he returned to Vedienka, he could ask Sukhoi if the woman smiling at him now from the piece of paper looked like the woman condemned to be devoured by the rats who had handed the child's life over to him at the station. Looked like his mother, though her face was then distorted in a grimace of despair and supplication. Sukhoi would recognize her. He had a fine memory. He would be able to say precisely who was in the photo. Was it her or not? Artyom examined the picture again. Then with an unaccustomed tenderness, he stroked the woman's image, carefully put the photograph into the little book out of which it had fallen, and put it away into his rucksack. It was strange, he thought, only several hours ago, he was in the largest storehouse of knowledge on the continent, where he could take for himself any of the millions of very different volumes, many of which were simply invaluable. But he had left them gathering dust on the shelves, and the thought never even crossed his mind to profit from the riches of the library. Instead, he was taking a cheap children's book with unpretentious drawings, and yet he felt as if he had gained the greatest of the world's treasures. Artyom returned to the hall, intending to leaf through the remaining books from the shelf, and perhaps even look into the cupboards in search of photograph albums. But lifting his eyes towards the window, he felt the almost imperceptible changes there. An uneasiness seized him, something wasn't right. Approaching nearer, he understood what was wrong. The night's color was changing, and yellowish rose tints had appeared in it. It was getting light. The beasts were sitting next to the entrance, hesitating to go inside. The dead body of their companion was nowhere to be seen, but whether the winged giant had carried it away or they had torn it to pieces themselves was unclear. Artyom didn't understand what kept them from taking the apartment by storm, but for the time being it suited him. Would he manage to reach Smolenskaya before sunrise? More importantly, would he be able to get away from his pursuers? It was possible to remain in the barricaded apartment, hide from the rays of the sun in the bathroom, wait until they chased away these predatory creatures and set out when darkness fell. But how long would the protective suit last? How long was his gas mask filter estimated to last? What would Melnik undertake not finding him in the agreed place at the agreed time? Artyom approached the door leading to the stairwell and listened. Silence. He carefully moved the cabinet away and slowly opened the door a little. There was no one there, but having illuminated the staircase with his flashlight, Artyom noticed something he had not seen earlier. A thick, transparent slime coated the steps. It looked as if something had just crawled down them, leaving a trail behind. The trail had not approached the apartment door where he had spent all this time, but this didn't console Artyom. Did it mean the abandoned houses were not as empty as they had seemed? Now he no longer wanted to stay in the apartment, let alone sleep here. There was only one possibility, to drive away the beasts, and to try to run to Smolenskaya, and do it before the sun burnt his eyes and the unseen monsters awoke. This time he aimed not as carefully, but tried to damage the predatory beasts as much as possible. Two of them roared and tumbled to the ground, and the others disappeared into the alleys. It seemed the road was clear. Artyom ran down, carefully concerned about an ambush, looked out of the entrance, and rushed with all his strength towards Sadovoya Koltso. What a nightmarish thicket must be there in the gardens on this ring, he thought, if even the thin strips of trees on the boulevards had, after all these years, been converted to dark labyrinths, not to mention the botanical gardens and what must be growing there. His pursuers had given him a head start while gathering into a pack, and he was able to reach almost the very end of the avenue. It was becoming ever more light, but the sun's rays apparently did not daunt these beasts at all. Breaking into two groups, they rushed along, shortening with every passing second the distance separating them from Artyom. Here, in the open space, the advantage was with them. Artyom was unable to stop to fire. At the same time, they were shifting to all fours, and their silhouettes did not rise more than a meter above the ground. They almost merged with the road. No matter how fast Artyom tried to run, the protective suit, rucksack, two machine guns, and fatigue, accumulated during the seemingly endless night, were making themselves felt. Soon these hellhounds would overtake him and take their toll, he thought with despair. He recalled the deformed but powerful bodies of the monsters lying in pools of blood at the entrance where his burst of machine gun fire had toppled them. Artyom had no time to examine them, but even one look was enough to engrave them on his memory for a long time. Glossy brown hair, huge round heads, and mouths studded with dozens of small sharp teeth that it seemed grew in several rows. Going over in his mind all the animals known to him, Artyom was unable to recall one that would have been able to produce such beasts even after the effects of radiation. Fortunately, there were no trees growing at Sadovoya Koltso. It was simply one more broad street, extending right and left from the intersection as far as the eye could see. Before breaking into a run again, Artyom let off a short burst at the beasts without looking. They were already less than 50 meters from him, and again had broken up into a semicircle so that some were moving almost level with him. At Sadovoya, he had to look for the road among several huge craters 5 to 6 meters deep and make a detour in one place in order to skirt a deep crevice that split the road surface in two. The structures standing close by looked strange. Rather than being burnt, they appeared more to have been melted. It created the impression that something peculiar had happened here, that this region had endured much more than Kalininsky Prospekt. And something like several hundred meters in the distance arose a building of inconceivable size. It looked like a medieval castle and was a majestic and somber background to this troubled landscape, untouched by time or fire. Artyom glanced up for a split second, and he let go a sigh of relief. A scary winged shadow soared over the castle, and that could become his salvation. He only had to attract its attention so that it busied itself with his pursuers. Lifting the machine gun in one hand and aiming the barrel at the flying monster, he squeezed the trigger. Nothing happened. He had run out of ammunition. It was difficult to drag the reserve machine gun hanging on his back forward while running. Diving into one of the nearest alleys, Artyom leaned against the wall and changed weapons. Now he didn't have to let the beasts come close while he emptied the magazine in the second machine gun. The first of them already had appeared from around the corner and sat on its hind quarters with the customary movement, extending itself to all its huge height. It had grown bolder and had approached so close that now Artyom was able to see its eyes for the first time, small, concealed beneath massive brows, burning with an evil green fire similar to the gleam of that mysterious flame in the park. There was no laser sight on Daniel's Kalashnikov, but one normally couldn't miss from such a distance. He framed the figure of the beast standing stock in his sight. Artyom squeezed the machine gun more tightly to his shoulder and pulled the trigger. Moving slowly to the center, the bolt stopped. What had happened? Could he really have confused the machine guns in his haste? Absolutely not, for his weapon had a laser sight. Artyom tried to wrench the bolt. It was stuck. A whirlwind of thought swirled in his head. Daniel, the librarians. That was why his comrade had not resisted when that gray monster attacked him in the labyrinth of books. His machine gun simply had not worked. He most likely had pulled the bolt just as spasmodically while the librarian dragged him into the depths of the corridors. There was silence as two more beasts appeared like specters. They were studying Artyom intently. He was looking in despair at Daniel's machine gun. It seemed that they were drawing their own conclusions. The closest of the creatures, most likely the leader, jumped, and now was only 5 meters from Artyom. At this moment, a gigantic shadow swept over their heads. The beasts pressed themselves to the ground and lifted their heads. Taking advantage of their confusion, Artyom dashed to one of the arches, no longer hoping to come out of this mess alive, but just trying instinctively to postpone the moment of his death. He had not the slightest chance against them in the alleys, but the way back to Sadovoye Kotso already had been cut off. He ended up in the middle of an empty square, bounded along the edges by the walls of houses in which arches and passages could be seen. That same gloomy castle that had impressed him at Sadovoye Kotso rose into the sky behind the building he was facing. Finally, tearing his gaze away from it, Artyom saw writing on the building opposite, the Moscow-VI-Lenin Underground Railroad, and a bit lower, Smolenskaya Station. The high oak doors were ajar. It was hard to say how he managed to evade them. He felt a premonition of danger and a sensation of a light air current was aware of a predator dashing towards its prey. The beast landed only a half meter from him. Easing sideways, he broke into a run and dashed with all his might towards the entrance to the metro. His home was there, his world, there beneath the ground he again would become master of the situation. The Smolenskaya vestibule looked exactly as Artyom had expected, dark, grey, empty. It at once became clear that the people at this station often came to the surface. The ticket booths and office facilities were open and ransacked, and everything of use had been moved underground many years ago. Neither the turnstiles nor the booths for the staff remained, their concrete foundations a mere reflection of what once had been. The arch of the tunnel was visible, and several escalators reached down to incredible depths. The flashlight's beam was lost somewhere in the middle of the descent, and Artyom was unable to ascertain that there really was an entrance there. But it was impossible to stay where he was. The beasts had already penetrated into the vestibule. He knew because he heard the creaking of the door. In a few seconds, they would reach the escalators, and that tiny head start he still had would disappear. Awkwardly stepping along the shaking, grooved steps, Artyom began his descent. He tried to hop across several steps, but his foot slipped on the damp covering and he crashed downward, striking the back of his head on a corner. He managed to stop only when he had hit about 10 steps with his helmet and the small of his back. Searching the section of the way behind him with his light, Artyom discovered exactly what he was looking for and was afraid to find. The stationary dark figures. As was their custom before they attacked, they stood stock still, studying the situation or conferring inaudibly. Artyom turned round and again tried to jump over 2 steps. This time it turned out better for him, and sliding his right hand along the rubber of the handrail while grasping his flashlight in his left, he ran for about another 20 seconds before he fell again. He heard heavy stomping from behind. The creatures were determined. Artyom hoped with his whole being that the old stairs woefully creaking beneath his lighter weight would just collapse, not sustaining the weight of his pursuers. But the clatter approaching from the shadows was evidence that the escalator was handling the load well. A brick wall with a large door in the middle appeared in the beam of his flashlight. Only about 20 meters remained to it, no more. Rising to his feet with difficulty, Artyom covered the final stretch in 15 seconds. It seemed like an eternity. The door was made of steel plates and echoed resonantly, like a bell at the blows of his fists. Artyom pounded at it with all his might. The approaching shadows which he saw dimly in the semi-darkness were spurring him on. Only after several seconds did he understand, a sudden chill overcoming him, what a terrible mistake he had just made. Instead of knocking at the door with the prearranged code, he had only alarmed the guards. Now it was most probable that there was no way it would be unlocked under any circumstances. It didn't matter who was trying to enter, and the fact that the sun was rising already made it even less likely that the door would be opened. Just how did the prearranged signal sound? Three quick, three slow, three quick? Absolutely not, that's an SOS. It was exactly three at the beginning and three at the end, but he was no longer able to recall quick or slow. And if he were to begin to experiment now, he could forget about any hope of getting inside. Better the SOS. At least then the guards would understand that a man was on the other side of the door. Having banged on the steel once more, Artyom pulled the submachine gun from his shoulder and, with hands shaking, replaced the clip in it. Then he pressed the light to the weapon's barrel and nervously outlined the upward-stretching arches with it. Long shadows from the surviving lamps covered each other in the wandering beam of his light, and it was impossible to guarantee that a dark silhouette didn't lurk in one of them. As before, it remained completely quiet on the other side of the iron door. Lord, it's really not Smolenskaya, Artyom thought. Maybe this entrance was blocked up decades ago and no one has used it since then. He had got here completely by accident, not following the instructions of the stalker at all. And he may have been wrong. The stairs creaked very near to him, about 15 meters away. Not able to bear it, Artyom let loose a burst of machine gun fire in the direction from which the sound had been heard. The echo pained Artyom's ears. But nothing like the howl of a wounded beast was heard. The shots were wasted. Not having the courage to look away, Artyom pressed his back against the door and again began to pound with his fist on the iron, three quick, three slow, three quick. He thought he heard a heavy metallic grinding sound from the door. But just at that moment, the figure of a predator flew from the shadows with a startling speed. Artyom held the submachine gun suspended in his right hand and pressed the trigger almost by accident when he instinctively recoiled backwards. The bullet swept the body of the creature in the air, and instead of seizing Artyom by the throat, it collapsed on the last steps of the escalator, having flown not 2 meters. But only a moment later, it raised itself and, ignoring the blood gushing from its wound, moved forward. Then, staggering, it leapt again and pressed Artyom to the cold steel of the door. It was no longer able to attack. The last bullets had struck its head, and the beast was dead already by the end of its lunge. But the inertia of its body would have been enough to crack Artyom's skull had he not been wearing a helmet. The door opened, and a bright white light burst out. A frightened roar was heard from the escalators. Judging by the sound, there were no fewer than 5 of these beasts there now. Someone's strong hands grasped him by the collar and pulled him inside, and the metal clanged once more. They shut the door and bolted it.
"Are you injured?"
someone's voice next to him asked.
"Damdefinos," another answered. "Did you see who he brought with him? We barely scared them away the last time, and even then only by using gas."
"Leave him. He's with me. Artyom. Hey, Artyom. Come to your senses,"
someone familiar called, and Artyom opened his eyes with difficulty. 3 men were leaning over him. 2 of them, most likely the gate guards, were dressed in dark grey jackets and knitted caps, and both wore bulletproof vests. With a sigh of relief, Artyom recognized Melnik as the 3rd.
"So is this him or what?"
one of the guards asked with some disappointment. Melnik nodded.
"Then take him, only don't forget about the quarantine and the decontamination."
"Any more lectures?" the stalker grinned.
"Stand up, Artyom. It's been a long time," he said, extending his hand to him.
Artyom tried to stand up, but his legs refused to work. He swayed and began to feel sick, and he was groggy.
"We have to get him to the infirmary. You help me, and you close the pressure doors," Melnik commanded.
While the doctor examined him, Artyom studied the white tiles of the operating room. It was sparkling clean. There was the sharp smell of bleach in the air, and several fluorescent lamps were fastened just beneath the ceiling. There were also a few operating tables there, and a box with instruments ready for use hung next to each one. The condition of the little hospital here was impressive. but why peaceful Smolenskaya needed it was unclear to Artyom.
No fractures, only bruises, several scratches. We have disinfected them, the doctor said, wiping his hands with a clean towel.
Can you leave us for a bit? Melnik asked the doctor. I would like to discuss something in private.
Nodding knowingly, the medic left. The stalker, having sat down on the edge of the couch on which Artyom was lying, demanded the details of what had happened. By his estimate, Artyom was supposed to show up at Smolenskaya 2 hours earlier, and Melnik had already started planning to go up to the surface to try to find him. He listened to the end of the story about the pursuit, but with no special interest, and he called the flying monsters by a dictionary word, pterodactyl, but only the story about how Artyom had concealed himself at the front door really impressed him. Learning that while Artyom was sitting snugly in his apartment, someone was creeping along the staircase, the stalker frowned.
Are you certain that you didn't step in the slime on the stairs?
He shook his head.
God forbid you bring that crap into the station. I've been telling you not to go near the houses. Consider yourself really lucky that it didn't decide to drop in on you when you were making your visit.
Melnik stood up, went to the entrance where Artyom's boots had been left and meticulously examined the soles of each of them. Not having found anything suspicious, he put them back.
As I've also said, the road to Polis is prohibited to you for the time being. I have not been able to tell the Brahmins the truth. Therefore, they think that you both disappeared during the trip to the library, and I was sent out to search for you. So what happened there to your partner?
Artyom told him the whole story once more from beginning to end, this time honestly explaining just exactly how Daniel had died. The stalker winced.
It's better you keep this to yourself. To be honest, I liked the first version a lot more. The second will cause too many questions from the Brahmins. Their man was killed by you. You didn't find the books, so the reward remained yours. And by the way, he added, looking sullenly at Artyom, what was in that envelope?
Raising himself on his elbow, Artyom took from his pocket a bag covered with dried blood, looked at Melnik attentively, and opened it.
Chapter 15. The Map. There was a sheet of paper taken from a school notebook and folded 4 times, and a leaf of thick drafting paper with rough penciled drawings of the tunnels. This was exactly what Artyom had expected to see inside the envelope, a map, and the keys to it. While he was running towards Smolenskaya across Kalininsky Prospekt, he hadn't had time to think about what may have been inside the bag that Daniel had passed to him. The miraculous resolution of a seemingly insoluble problem, something capable of taking from the Vedienche and the whole of the metro an incomprehensible and inexorable threat. A reddish-brown spot had spread in the middle of the sheet of explanations. The paper, glued fast with the Brahmin's blood, would have to be dampened a bit to reveal its message, and great care would have to be taken not to damage the finely written instructions on it. Part number, tunnel, D6, intact installations, up to 400,000 square meters, a water fountain, not in good working order, unforeseen. The words sprang at Artyom, trying to jump from the horizontal lines. They merged into one whole, and their sense remained absolutely incomprehensible to him. Having despaired of shaping them into something sensible, he handed the message to Melnik. The latter took the sheet into his hand with care and fastened his covetous eyes onto the letters. For some time he didn't say anything, and then Artyom saw how his eyebrows crept upwards with suspicion.
This can't be, the stalker whispered. It's just all nonsense. They couldn't have overlooked something like this.
He turned the sheet over, looked at it from the other side, and then began to read it again from the very beginning.
They kept it for themselves. They didn't tell the military. Not a surprise, really. Show them something like this, and they'll immediately take it as something old.
Melnik mumbled indistinctly while Artyom patiently awaited some explanations.
But did they really overlook it? It's faulty. Well, let's assume it is okay. That means they must have checked it.
Can it really help? Artyom finally couldn't stand it.
If everything written here is true, then there's hope.
The stalker nodded. What's it about? I didn't understand a thing.
Melnik didn't answer right away. Once more he read the message to the end, then thought for several seconds, and only after that did he begin his tale.
I had heard about such a thing before. Legends were always flying about, but there are thousands of them in the metro, you see, and we live by legends, and not by bread alone. About university, about the Kremlin and about police, you can't make out what is the truth, and what was contrived around the bonfire at Ploshad Ilycha. And so you see, generally there were rumors that somewhere in Moscow or outside of Moscow a missile unit had survived. Of course, there is no way that could have happened. Military facilities are always the number one target. But the rumors said they were unsuccessful, or they didn't see it through, or they forgot it, and one missile unit wasn't damaged at all. They said that someone had even walked there, had seen something there, and allegedly the installations were beneath a tarpaulin, brand new in the hangars. True, there's no need for them in the metro. You can't reach your enemies at such a depth. They stand. Well, let them remain standing.
What have missile installations got to do with it? Artyom looked at the stalker in amazement and lowered his feet from the couch.
The Dark Ones come to Fedyenka from the Botanical Garden. Hunters suspected that they come down into the metro from the surface right in that area. It's logical to assume that they live right up there. As a matter of fact, there are two versions. The first says that they come from a place that is like a beehive, figuratively speaking, not far from the metro entrance. The second says that in truth there is no beehive, and the Dark Ones come from outside the city. Then there's the question, why haven't we noticed more of them anywhere else? It is illogical. Although, perhaps it's a matter of time. Generally, this is the situation. If they arrive from somewhere far away, we won't be able to do anything with them anyhow. We blow up the tunnels beyond the Vedienka, or even beyond Prospekt Mir. Sooner or later, they'll find new entrances. Barricading ourselves in the metro will be our only option, closing ourselves in tight and forgetting about returning to the surface and forever subsisting on pigs and mushrooms. As a stalker, I can say with certainty that we won't last so long. But if they have a beehive, and it is somewhere close by, as Hunter thought...
Missiles? Artyom said at last.
A salvo of 12 rockets with high explosive fragmentation warheads covers an area of 400,000 square meters.
Melnik read, finding the necessary place in the message.
Several such salvos from the Botanical Garden will turn them to dust.
But you just said that these are legends, Artyom objected.
Well, the Brahmins said they aren't.
The stalker waved the sheet.
It even explains here how to find our way to the location of this military unit. True, it also says that the installations are partially inoperable.
Well, just how then do we get there?
D6. It mentions D6 here. Metro 2. The location of one of the entrances is indicated. They maintain that the tunnel leads from there towards this unit. But they stipulate themselves that unforeseen obstacles may arise on trying to get through to Metro 2.
Unseen observers? Artyom recalled a conversation he had heard once.
Observers? That's rubbish and nonsense.
Melnik wrinkled his face. The missile unit was also just a legend, Artyom added.
And it remains a legend as long as I haven't seen it myself.
The stalker cut him short. And where is the exit to Metro 2?
It's written here. Mayakovskaya Station. That's strange. As many times as I've been to Mayakovskaya, I have never heard anything like that.
So what will we do now?
Artyom was curious.
Come with me, the stalker answered. You have a bite, relax, and I'll think about it for a while. We'll discuss it tomorrow.
Only when Melnik began to talk about food did Artyom suddenly become aware of how hungry he was. He sprang to the cold, tiled floor and was at the point of hobbling toward his boots when the stalker stopped him with a gesture.
Leave your shoes and all your clothes. Put them there in that box. They will clean and disinfect them. They will also check your rucksack. Over there on the table are trousers and a jacket. Put those on.
Smolenskaya looked gloomy. A low semicircular ceiling and narrow arches in massive walls lined with marble that was once white. Although decorative false columns overhung from the arches and well-preserved plasterwork adorned the walls at the top, all of it only accentuated his first impression. The station gave the impression of a citadel besieged for a long time that its defenders had adorned in their own manner, giving the place an even more stern appearance. The double cement wall with the massive steel doors along both sides of the pressurized gate, the concrete firing points at the entrances to the tunnels, all said that the inhabitants here had grounds to fear for their safety. Women were hardly seen at Smolenskaya, but all the men were carrying weapons. When Artyom asked Melnik directly what happened at this station, the latter only vaguely shook his head and said that he could not see anything unusual here. However, a strange sensation of tension hanging in the air did not leave Artyom. It was as if everyone here was waiting for something. The stalls were arranged in a line in the center of the hall, and all the arches were left free, as though they were afraid to obstruct them so as not to hinder an emergency evacuation. At the same time, all the housing was situated exclusively in the spaces between the arches. Halfway along each train platform, where it went down to the rails, sat duty personnel, who constantly kept the tunnels under observation from both sides. The almost total silence at the station added to the picture. The people here spoke in low voices among themselves, sometimes going into a whisper altogether, as if they were afraid that their voices may drown out some kind of troubling sounds coming from the tunnels. Artyom tried to recall what he knew about Smolenskaya. Did it perhaps have dangerous neighbors? No, on one side the rails led to the bright and safe police, the heart of the metro, and the other tunnel led to Kievskaya, about which Artyom remembered only that it was populated mainly by those very same Caucasians he had seen at Kitai Gorod and in the cells of the fascists at Pushkinskaya. But these were normal people, and they were hardly worth being so concerned about. A dining room was located in the central tent. Dinner time, judging by everything, had already passed because only a few people remained at the crude, homemade tables. Sitting Artyom at one of the tables, Melnik returned a few minutes later with a bowl in which an unappetizing gray, thin gruel smoked. Under the reassuring glance of the stalker, Artyom dared to try it and didn't stop until the bowl had been emptied. The local dish turned out to be simply remarkable in taste, although it was difficult to define from what specifically it had been prepared. One could say for certain that the cook hadn't spared the meat. Having finished eating and putting the earthen bowl aside, Artyom calmly looked around. Two men still sat at the neighboring table, speaking quietly. While they were dressed in conventional quilted jackets, there was something in their appearance that caused him to imagine them in full protective suits and with automatic rifles at the ready. Artyom caught the look one of them exchanged with Melnik. Not a word was spoken aloud. The man in the quilted jacket examined Artyom casually and returned to his leisurely conversation. Several more minutes slipped by in silence. Artyom attempted to speak once more with him about the station, but Melnik answered reluctantly and curtly. Then the man in the quilted jacket stood up from his seat, walked to their table, and leaning towards Melnik said,
"What will we do with Kievskaya? It's coming to a head." "Okay, Artyom, go have a rest," the stalker said. "The third tent from here is for guests. The bed has already been made up. I made the arrangements. I'm going to stay here for a while. I have to talk to these guys."
With a familiar, unpleasant feeling, as if they had sent him away so that he couldn't overhear adult conversations, Artyom obediently stood up and pushed off towards the exit. At least he'd be able to study the station alone, he consoled himself. Now, when he was able to take a closer, more attentive look, Artyom discovered several more small peculiarities. The hall had been perfectly cleared, and the assorted junk with which the majority of the inhabited stations in the metro were unavoidably filled was completely missing here. And Smolenskaya was larger and did not give the appearance of an inhabited station. It suddenly reminded him of a picture from a history book in which a military encampment of Roman legionnaires was depicted. Correctly and symmetrically organized space which faced in all directions, nothing of excess, sentries placed everywhere, and reinforced entrances and exits. He didn't manage to walk around the station for very long, having been confronted by the frankly suspicious glances of its inhabitants. Artyom understood after only several minutes that they were watching him, and so he preferred to retreat to the guest tent. A made-up cot really did await him there, and in a corner stood a plastic bag with his name on it. Artyom sunk into the springs of the squeaking cot and opened the bag. Inside were the things that he had left in the rucksack. Digging in it for a second, he drew from the bag the children's book he had brought from the surface. He wondered if they had checked his little treasure with a Geiger counter. Certainly the decimeter would have begun to click nervously near the book, but Artyom preferred not to think about it. He leafed through a few pages, making out the slightly faded pictures on the yellowed paper, delaying the moment when he would find his own photograph between the next pages. Would it be his? Whatever happened to him now, to the Belyenka and to the whole metro, first he must return to his own station in order to ask Sukhoi, who's in this photo? Is it my mother or not? Artyom pressed his lips to the picture, then again laid it between the pages and concealed the book back into the rucksack. For a second, it had shown to him that something in his life was gradually falling into place, and a moment later, he was asleep. When Artyom opened his eyes and left the tent, he didn't even consider how much the station had changed. Fewer than 10 complete housing units remained there. The rest had been broken or burned. The walls were covered with soot and pocked by bullets. The plaster was crumbling from the ceiling and lay on the floor in large pieces. Around the edges of the platform flowed ominous black rivulets, the precursors of a coming flood. There was hardly anyone in the hall, only a small girl playing with toys alongside one of the tents. From the other platform, where the staircase of a new exit from the station went, muffled screams were heard. Only 2 surviving emergency lighting lamps dispelled the darkness in the hall. The submachine gun that Artyom had left at the head of the cot had disappeared somewhere. Searching the whole stall in vain, he resigned himself to the fact that he had to go unarmed. Just what had happened here? Artyom would have liked to question the little girl who was playing, but she, having just seen him, desperately broke into tears, so that to get anything from her proved to be impossible. Leaving the little girl choking in her tears, Artyom carefully passed through the arch and glanced at the path. The first thing that caught his glance was the 3 bronze letters screwed to the marble facing. V-N-H. Where the D should have been, only a dark trace was visible. A deep crack went across the whole inscription along the marble. He had to check what was happening in the tunnels. If someone had captured the stations then before going back for assistance, he had to explore the situation in order to explain exactly to his allies from the south what danger threatened them. Immediately after the entrance to the line, there was such an impenetrable darkness that Artyom could see no further than the elbow of his own arm. Something was uttering strange chomping sounds in the depth of the tunnel, and it was insane to go there unarmed. When the sounds stopped for a short while, he began to hear the water babbling along the floor, flowing round his boots and rushing back towards Vedyenka. His legs shook and refused to step forward. The voice in his head warned over and over again that it was dangerous to go on, that the risk was too great and he would not be able to discern anything in such darkness anyhow. But another part of him, not paying any attention to all those sensible arguments, was pulling him deeper into the darkness, and having surrendered himself, he, like a wind-up toy, made one more step ahead. The darkness surrounding him became total, and nothing was visible. A strange sensation arose in Artyom, as if his body had disappeared. Only the rumor of his former self remained, and he depended wholly on his mind. Artyom moved forward for some time more, but the sounds from the direction he was heading did not get nearer. Then others were heard, the rustle of steps, the exact duplicate of those he had been hearing earlier in the same darkness, but he was unable to recall where exactly and under what circumstances. and with every new step reaching him from the unseen depth of the tunnel, Artyom felt as if a black, cold horror was seeping, drop by drop, into his heart. In several moments, he, not being able to endure it, turned and broke headlong for the station, but, not seeing the cross ties in the darkness, tripped over one of them and fell, knowing that now the inevitable end had come. He broke out in a sweat, and didn't even consider immediately that he had fallen out of the cot during a dream. His head was unusually heavy, a dull pain pulsed in his temples, and Artyom spent another few minutes on the floor, until he finally came to. But even then, he was unable to lift himself to his feet. But at that moment, when his head had cleared a little, the remnants of the nightmare completely vanished, and he was no longer able even to recall approximately just what he had dreamed. Lifting the curtain, he glanced outside. Beside some sentries, there was no one. Evidently, it was now night. Deeply inhaling and exhaling the customary damp air several times, Artyom returned to the tent, stretched out on the cot, and slept like a log without any dreams. Melnik woke him. Dressed in a dark, insulated jacket with turned-up collar and military trousers with pockets, he looked as if he intended to leave the station any minute now. He had on his head that very same old black field cap, and two large bags, which seemed familiar to Artyom, stood at his feet. Melnik moved one of them toward Artyom with his boot and said,
"Here, shoes, a suit, a backpack, and weapons. Change your shoes and get ready. You don't have to put on any armor. We don't intend to go to the surface. Just bring it along. We leave in half an hour."
"Where are we going?" Artyom asked, half awake, eyes fluttering and trying to restrain a yawn.
"Kievskaya. If you are okay, then along the ring to Bieloruskaya and to Mayakovskaya. And there we'll see. Get ready."
The stalker took a seat on a stool standing in the corner, and pulling a scrap of newspaper from his pocket, began to roll himself a cigarette, looking at Artyom from time to time. Under this watchful eye, Artyom was nervous and fumbled everything. However, after about 20 minutes, he was ready. Not saying a word, Melnik rose from the stool, grabbed his bag, and walked to the platform. Artyom looked round the room and followed him. They passed through an arch and exited toward the path. Climbing along the wooden staircase added to the path, Melnik nodded to the sentry and began to walk towards the tunnel. Only now did Artyom notice how strangely the entrances to the lines were arranged. On the side of the platform that led to Kievskaya, half the path was blocked by a concrete weapon emplacement with narrow gun slots. A metal grate obstructed the passage as well, and there were two sentries on duty. Melnik gabbed with them in short, unintelligible phrases, after which one of the guards opened the hinged lock and pushed the grate. Along one side of the tunnel stretched spooled black insulation wire from which weak lumps hung every 10 or 15 meters, but even such poor lighting seemed a real luxury to Artyom. However, after 300 steps, the wire had become detached, and in this place one more sentry awaited them. There were no uniforms on the patrol members, but they looked much more serious than the military at police. Knowing Melnik by sight, one of them nodded at him, letting him pass ahead. Stopping at the edge of the lighted space, the stalker took a flashlight from his bag and switched it on. After another several 100 meters, voices were heard ahead, and the glows of flashlights appeared. Melnik's submachine gun slid down from his shoulder and ended up in his hands in an imperceptible movement. Artyom followed his example. Most likely, it was another long-range patrol from Smolenskaya. Two strong armed men in warm jackets with fake fur collars were arguing with three peddlers. The patrol had round knitted caps on their heads, and on the chest of each hung night vision instruments on leather straps. The two peddlers had weapons with them, but Artyom was ready to bet anything that they were just traders. Huge bales of rags, a map of the tunnels in their hands, the special roguish look, the animatedly shining eyes in the beams of the flashlights. He had seen all of this repeatedly. They let peddlers into all the stations, usually without any problems, but it seemed no one expected them at Smolenskaya.
"Well, it's okay, Pearl, we are going by,"
one of the traders was trying to convince a patrol member, a lanky moustached man in a quilted jacket that fit too tightly.
"We have our belongings here, take a look for yourself, we will be trading at police,"
echoed the other peddler, a chunky guy with hair down his eyes.
What harm is there for you? There's only good. Here, take a look. Jeans, just like new. Your size for certain. Brand name. I'll give them to you for free.
The third had taken the initiative. The sentry shook his head in silence, blocking their passage. He answered next to nothing, but as soon as one of the peddlers, taking his silence for agreement, tried to step ahead, both sentries nearly simultaneously clacked the bolts of their submachine guns. Melnik and Artyom stood 5 paces behind them, and though the stalker lowered his weapon, the tension was felt in his attitude.
Stop. I'm giving you 5 seconds to turn around and leave. It's a secure station. They don't allow anyone here. 5. 4.
One of the sentries began to count.
Well, how are we supposed to get there? Through the ring again?
One of the peddlers was about to get perturbed, but another, shaking his head resignedly, tugged him by the sleeve, and the traders picked up their bales from the ground and dragged themselves back. Waiting for a minute, the stalker gave Artyom a sign, and they began to walk to Kievskaya right behind the peddlers. When they were passing the sentries, one of them silently nodded to Melnik and put 2 fingers to his head as if giving a salute.
A security station?
Artyom was curious when they themselves had passed the cordon.
What's that mean?
Go back and ask,
Melnik snapped, stopping Artyom from asking any more questions. Although Artyom and Melnik were trying to hold a bit further back from the peddlers walking ahead, the sound of their voices came ever closer, and then suddenly stopped short. But they hadn't passed even 20 paces when the beam of a light struck them in the face.
Hey! Who's there? What do you need?
Someone cried nervously, and Artyom recognized the voice of one of the traders.
Calm down. Let us pass. We won't bother you. We're going to Kievskaya, the stalker answered quietly but clearly.
Pass. We'll let you go ahead. No use breathing down our necks,
they declared from the darkness after conferring briefly. Melnik shrugged his shoulders with displeasure and leisurely moved ahead. After about 30 meters, that very same trio of peddlers was waiting for them. Upon Artyom and Melnik's approach, the traders politely lowered their wares to the floor, parted, and allowed them to pass. The stalker, as if nothing had happened, began walking further on, but Artyom noted that his pace had changed. Now he walked silently, as if hoping to muffle the sounds. Although the peddlers immediately followed them, Melnik didn't look at them once. Artyom himself had been trying to overcome the desire to turn round for a rather long time, about 3 minutes, but then he looked back anyhow.
Hey!
A tense voice was heard from behind.
Wait up there!
The stalker stopped. Artyom began to feel perplexed. Why was Melnik so obediently responding to some petty traders?
Are they so bitter because of Kievskaya or because they are protecting police?
One of the peddlers asked on catching up with them.
Naturally because of Kievskaya,
Melnik replied, and Artyom felt a pang of jealousy. The stalker hadn't wanted to tell him anything.
Yeah, I can understand that. It's getting scary at Kievskaya now. Well, it's all right. Soon these neatniks from your guard will have to be hot. Everyone will be running to you from Kievskaya. Do you understand just who will remain living at the station? It'd be better to be shot,
the lanky peddler mumbled.
Have you rushed the guns yourself?
The other spitefully harumphed.
Don't pretend you're a hero. Well, you haven't been too odd yourself either,
the lanky one responded.
And just what's going on?
Artyom couldn't contain himself. The 2 peddlers immediately looked at him as if he had asked a question so stupid that even a child knows the answer. The stalker kept quiet, and the peddlers grew silent, and they walked for some time in complete silence. Whether because of this, or perhaps because the prolonged silence was growing spooky, Artyom suddenly no longer wanted to hear any explanation, and when he had decided he was about to give up on them, the lanky one finally and reluctantly pronounced,
"The tunnels to Park Pobjedi are there, right ahead."
Hearing the name of the station, his 2 fellow travelers pressed closer to each other, and Artyom imagined for a second there was the rush of dank tunnel air, and the tunnel walls were collapsing. Even Melnik shrugged as if trying to warm himself. Artyom had never heard anything bad about Park Pobjedi and was not able to recall 1 tale associated with this station. So just why, suddenly, had he become so uneasy at the sound of its name?
What is it getting worse?
The stalker asked gravely.
What do we know? We are just ordinary folks. We pass it sometimes.
Stay there. You'll understand,
the bearded one mumbled vaguely.
People disappear,
the thick-set peddler stated under his breath.
Many are frightened, so they run. One can never make out who has disappeared or who ran away on their own, and it's even more awful for the rest. All these tunnels are damned, said the lanky one, and he spat at the ground.
But the tunnels are blocked,
Melnick was stating a fact.
They've been blocked for 100 years, but what about since then? Well, if you're a stranger, then it's better you should understand us. Everyone knows there that there is a fear of the tunnels, even though they have been blown up and blocked 3 times, and anyone can feel it in their skin as soon as they show up here. Even Sergeyich over there.
The lanky one pointed at his bearded companion.
Exactly,
the shaggy Sergeyich confirmed, and he crossed himself for some reason or other.
But they're guarding the tunnels, aren't they?
Melnick asked.
The patrols are here every day,
the bearded one nodded.
And have they ever caught anyone? Or seen someone?
The stalker prodded.
How would we know?
The peddler gestured helplessly.
I haven't heard, but they tried to catch someone.
And what do the locals say about it?
Melnick wasn't backing off. The lanky one said nothing, he only gestured somberly. But Sergeyich glanced back and said in a loud whisper,
It's the city of the dead.
And thereupon he crossed himself again. Artyom wanted to burst out laughing. He'd already heard too many stories, fables, legends, and theories about just where the dead are found in the metro, and of souls in the pipes along the tunnel walls and the gates to hell which they're digging at one of the stations. Now there's a city of the dead at Park Pyobedi. But the ghostly draught had caused him to suppress his laughter, and despite the warm clothing it had chilled him. Worst of all was the fact that Melnick fell silent and ceased all inquiries. Artyom hoped that his companion was just scornfully waving aside such an absurd idea. They passed the rest of the way in silence, each of them immersed in his own thoughts. The way proved to be completely quiet, empty, dry, and clear, but despite everything, the heavy sensation that something bad awaited them intensified with every step. As soon as they stepped into the station, this feeling rushed over them like subterranean waters, just as uncontrollable and just as turbid and chilling. Fear ruled completely here, and this was apparent at first glance. Was this that sunny Kievskaya about which the man from the Caucasus, who was staying with him in a cell in fascist captivity, had spoken? Or did he have in mind a station with the same name located at Filevskaya branch? You couldn't say that the station was neglected and that all its inhabitants had fled. It turned out that there were many people here, but Kievskaya gave the impression that it did not belong to its residents. They all were trying to stay close together. Tents were stuck to the walls and to each other in the center of the hall. The distance between them required by the fire safety regulations was not observed anywhere. Clearly these people were frightened of something more dangerous than fire. Those passing by immediately and wearily looked away when Artyom looked them in the eyes, and avoiding the strangers tore from their path as beetles scurrying along cracks. The platform, squeezed between 2 rows of low, round arches, went downward at one side, with several of the escalators, and at the other was raised at the short staircase where the side passage to the other station had been opened. Coals smouldered in several places, and there was a tantalizing aroma of roast meat. Somewhere, a child was crying. Though Kievskaya was located on the edge of the city of the dead that the frightened peddlers had spoken of, it was fully alive. Quickly saying goodbye, the peddlers disappeared into the passage to the other line. Melnick, prudently having looked along the sides, resolutely began to walk to the side of one of the passages. It was immediately apparent he had been here regularly. Artyom was unable to fathom why the stalker had questioned the peddlers in such detail about the station. Had he been hoping that a hint of the true state of affairs be revealed accidentally? Was he trying to flush out possible spies? They stopped after a second at an entrance to some office facilities. The door here had been knocked off, but a guard stood on the outside, the authorities, Artyom guessed. A smoothly shaven elderly man with well-combed hair came out to meet the stalker. He wore the old blue uniform of a subway worker, aged and faded by washing, but surprisingly clean. It was clear how he managed to look after himself at this station. The man saluted Melnick, for some reason placing only 2 fingers to his forehead, and not sincerely as the patrols had done in the tunnel, but ludicrously. He squinted derisively.
Good day,
he said in a pleasant, deep voice. Good day, Sam, the stalker replied, and he smiled. In 10 minutes, they were seated in a warm room and drinking the best of mushroom tea. This time they didn't leave Artyom out as he had expected, but they allowed him to take part in a discussion of serious matters.